I haven't had the time to get into subjects. There's so many things I need to talk about. Now, we've been talking about the lost tribes, the 10 tribes. You can't teach on last day events if you don't understand who's who. Now, one subject I've studiously avoided is a problem the Jews face. Now, I have tens of thousands of Jewish friends who listen to me for no other reason than as students of the Old Testament. I have a Jewish rabbi. He shares books with me, and they help enlighten my understanding of their history and vice versa. Now, we think of Catholics as a homogeneous whole. There are some differences, not as many as some groups. Now, Protestants include everybody from Pentecostals and Church of Christ to Episcopals, though they don't protest much anymore. Are you aware of how many... Now, I've said already there is no such thing as a Jewish physiological type. And it is very clear that a Jew is defined also by religion. But do you have any idea what a problem it is to determine what a Jew is? Now, a lot of people in the world today are accepting the fact that the new state Israel defines what a Jew is. And let me say, going out the gate, I believe in the Zionist cause. And I believe that the return of the Jew is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, and I will be concerned and share the concern that many have for displaced people in any area. But I believe that the Jew is a descendant of those promised people. And when I teach on the lost tribes, I'm not like some identity people who turn into racists and try to say a Jew's not a Jew. That's nonsense. And for years, the Jewish state has dealt with this problem. What is a Jew? At the founding of the state, anybody said there was a Jew, they let him in. Then they passed a law, and various ones within their community began to react. There is a sect called the Karaites. Now, that was a major problem in Nazi Germany. And they ultimately concluded they were not Jews. Try to tell that to that little synagogue in Israel today, just south of Tel Aviv. And a very fascinating area of study are the distinctions within Jewry. And if we're going to talk about the last day events, the stick of Joseph and the stick of Judah that must be joined, I must not limit all the teaching I'm doing to the lost tribes that were not Jews. But how about Jews? Now, I don't want to offend anybody. I teach as a historian. My dad went to pastor a church once in a little town called Gridley in Northern California, where I got beat up every day I went to school until I learned to hide in the alley with a hoe and take hunks of flesh and let a few people know there's going to be some prices paid. You ever seen a hoe coming at you with an uppercut? I got tired of getting beat up. And I got beat up because my dad pastored a church that used to be pastored by an idiot. Well, when he took the church, there's only 7 members or 8 members voted him in, something like that. And here I am, poor little old preacher's kid, going to school, getting beat up because my dad pastored this church pastored by an idiot. This idiot had his relatives taken out to an olive orchard, nail him to a tree so he could imitate the pain of Jesus in his hands. And I got beat up for that jack. I'm going to beat him up if he's in heaven. When I get up there, I'm going to chase him down the golden streets with a hoe. Just because my dad got elected to this church and got a new congregation in, I got beat up because
My dad pastored this church.
I know what a minority feeling is. There are a lot of idiots in the Christian history, you know. And you don't have to be putting down a modern situation to talk about it, but there are just a lot of people that need to be educated to the fact that the vast stratum of Jewry, world Jewry, and I'm not saying jewelry, has some diversity in it. And the Messiah concept has been so abused that people got turned off on it. But you know, there are some people who think that only Christians have gone idiotic and gathered in white robes and expected the Lord to come. I mean, the Jews have got some of their black sheep in their history too. Now, I'm teaching history. I am pro-Jewish in regard to having to accept the fact of God's promises and what God promises as blessings and cursings. I'm teaching as a historian. And I don't want some anti-defamation group listening to a sentence or two and putting me out of context. I'm going to get madder as hell at you. You see, I got blacks and whites in my church, but I don't have any niggers. And there are white niggers and black niggers. And there are black honkies and white honkies. And there ain't none of them in my church. I have intelligent black and white and brown. Anybody else got brains and characters in my church? Those epithets are for idiots. It's like I've seen just about as many Okies in California as I have in Oklahoma. Okies is a kind, you know. They got the 7-year itch. Haven't worked in 40 years. And raised ratty, snot-nosed kids by the hundreds. Somewhere in their remote antiquity, they sprung from a rabbit. Has nothing to do with state. Has to do with behavior. I'll fight for Jews. I've supported Israel. I've already said thousands of people listen to me. But I think it's terrible when you can't look at history. I can't stand Catholics that are unwilling to look at their history. My Lord. Luther about went bananas when he went to Rome, discovered a statue there to the female Pope. She never would have been caught marching in her robes. She hadn't dropped a baby in the procession. Friends, that's history. That doesn't make the papacy bad. Just made them kind of foolish for a while. They got the robes pulled over their eyes. Now, I want to talk to you about Jews. Not the ones that know they're Jews and are easily identified, that have the liturgical or the Israeli state argument. I can read you the whole chapter here on what's the standard of Jews. You ever hear about these? Because, you see, in the Jewish history, they've had some bad Messiah products, too. Not long after World War, I'm reading from Acts of Faith, A Journey to the Fringes of Jewish Identity by Dan Ross. Fascinating study. I just want you to know there's some other areas we can get in. Not long after World War I, European diplomats faced one of the most bewildering dilemmas in the annals of Jewish identity. You know what the Morenos are, don't you? You know what the Morenos are? It comes from a word that means swine. It was an epithet against the Jews that hid out in Portugal and Spain. And during the Inquisition, one king didn't want to kill a whole bunch of them, so he gathered them at a dock where they were going to be shipped away, they thought, and sprayed them with hoses. And they became new Christians, baptized with a hose. And so they then practiced they were new Christians on the surface and went underground in their faith. And that became an abstract word to describe those who practice the Jewish faith in secret. Morenos. That's another subject. They got a fascinating history, too. Not as simple as some people think. Now, I'm not going to teach like the guy who wrote on the 13th tribe and said that the Khazarite kingdom so deluded the Jews that the Ashkenazim Jews are not really Jews. That's not true. They are. Plus, Exodus 12 says a stranger coming in adopting the faith has the same benefits. There's a religious Jew and there is a national Jew. But the national Jew is pretty hard to identify. But there are some differences religiously. Not long after World War I, European diplomats faced one of the most bewildering dilemmas in the annals of Jewish identity. It occurred when the Ottoman Empire was carved into the new nations of Greece and Turkey. That's the same time that Palestine became the mandate for Britain. The two states agreed on a population exchange to transfer their people to match the new borders. Although Greeks and Turks had lived side by side, if not exactly peacefully, in all parts of the old Ottoman Empire, the idea of the modern nation-state was to give each people its own homeland. In 1922 to 24, more than 1 million Greeks moved to what was now Greece, and 350,000 Turks moved to Turkey. In the Treaty of Lausanne, endorsed by most European powers in 1923, the two nations agreed to define identity according to religion. Greeks and Turks were not allowed to decide what they were themselves. With only a few exceptions, Muslims had to move to Turkey, and Orthodox Christians had to go to Greece. Jews, wherever they happened to live, were allowed to stay there. Now, if you owned a farm and you were going to be moved to Greece if you weren't a Muslim, or to Turkey if you weren't a Christian, it would become profitable to be a Jew, because the Jews could stay put. So it became one of those occasions when the question, who is a Jew, was more than academic. The city most affected by the population exchange was the old Turkish commercial center, Salonika, now Thessalonica, Greece. It was perhaps the most Jewish city in the world. For centuries, until it was captured by Greece in 1912, more Jews had lived in Salonika than Greeks and Turks combined. It was the capital of Sephardi Jewry, not Spain, Salonika. And in more prosperous times of the entire Jewish world, Jewish merchants had run the great trading houses, Jewish scholars headed the city's academies, Jewish longshoremen controlled Salonika's docks. Only Christians rested on Sundays, and only Muslims on Friday. But the entire city shut down each Saturday. Muslims, Christians, and Jews strolled the waterfront, calling out Shabbat Shalom to each other as they passed on the esplanade. The commercial language of the city was neither Greek nor Turkish, but Ladino, the Judeo-Spanish dialect brought by the refugees from the Inquisition 400 years before. It had been spoken ever since in Salonika, where the majority of Jews were of Spanish or Portuguese origin. You know, what I'm trying to make you tune in on, you can't understand history without understanding religion. You can't understand much in this world if you're not willing to confront religion. Of course, if you want the wrong part of your body in the air, become an ostrich. A group of 10,000 to 15,000 Muslims in Salonika, known as Dome, tried to circumvent. These Dome or Donme or Dunme tried to circumvent the population exchange. They said they were not really Turks, but Jews who only practiced the Muslim religion. Their appeal was denied. The Greek government did not dispute their contention, but simply pointed to the Treaty of Lausanne, which defined Turks by religion, not ethnic origin. About the same time, a few Donme asked Salonika's rabbis to accept them back into Judaism. They claimed they were really secret Jews. Now, This gave the rabbis a problem because Morenos were known since the Inquisition, who practiced their faith in secret but outwardly embraced another religion. They asked the rabbis to take them back. They claimed they were really secret Jews. For the last 240 years, they said, they'd only pretended to be Muslims. The rabbis denied their appeal. But like the Greeks, they did not dispute the Dongme's strange contention. Their refusal was not based upon them practicing the Muslim faith in open, and they didn't deny that they were secret Jews. Their refusal was based on odder grounds. The Dongme, they said, were, how do I say this word? Illegitimate. The Dongmes were illegitimate. There's a different word here. The Hebrew word. The Dongme were mamzerim. For a precise definition of this term, see chapter 7. They held, listen to this faith, they held annual orgies where they slept with each other's spouses, charged the rabbis, so the rabbis could not be sure who their fathers were. And as the Bible says, and I can't even read the Bible on this, as the Bible says, and a mamzerim shall not enter the assembly of the Lord even unto the tenth generation. Don't get it here. I can't put it on TV. That's one of those seven words. You see, I know my law. An illegitimate child shall not enter the assembly of the Lord even unto the tenth generation. Boy, the law was cruel. The Dongme had no alternative but to leave Salonika. Some went to Bulgaria and other Balkan states where they were thought of as Turks. A few are said to have gone to Western Europe, Palestine or America, where they may have become Jews. The vast majority joined Salonika's other Muslims in the exodus to Turkey. There the Dongme settled in three cities, Izmir, formerly Smyrna, which is the site of Ephesus, Edirne, formerly Adrianople, and Istanbul, formerly Constantinople. Most continued to live together in their own neighborhoods. Some, no one knows how many, continued practicing their strange secret cult. To this day, a few aging Muslims in those cities may still be praying to the God of the Jews and waiting for the return of his Messiah, Shabbatai Zevi. Remember Shabbatai Zevi? That medieval Messiah? The word Dongme means convert in Turkish, but only Salonika's Turks use that name for the sect. Jews prefer to call them Minim, a Hebrew word meaning heretics. The Dongme themselves use neither of these terms, preferring another Hebrew word, Ma'aminim, meaning believers. This terminology was an accurate reflection of each group's perspective. In this day and age, what the Dongme believed and can only be described as incredible, that a 17th century false Messiah named Shabbatai Zevi was the Redeemer of Israel and that the path of redemption lay in pretending to be a Muslim, and that Shabbatai's appearance had invalidated old concepts of law and morality. What once was prohibited was now permitted. The story of the Dongme may be the most bizarre in the annals of Judaism. That voluntary Muranos lived a licentious double life as Jews and Muslims in a major European city in our own time challenges our credulity. Only by suspending our rational instincts can we comprehend their faith in a false Messiah otherwise discredited hundreds of years before. Mysticism and Messianism used to be the neglected stepchildren of Jewish studies. Until recently, modern Jews preferred to ignore that dark side of their heritage. Jewish historian schooled in the 19th century rationalism dismissed it as the superstition of a misguided few. Now, you remember what I told you, how when a truth is intended by God to be embraced, Satan will send his caricatures along and turn people off on it, from pyramidology to the works of the Spirit to giving for proper purposes? Well, Satan's been working to turn the Jews off on a Messiah concept with frauds like this. But as the last days approach, all this has radically changed in the last few decades. Led by the remarkable Gershom Scholem, who virtually invented Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism, as a field of scientific research, contemporary scholars are reevaluating the Messiah concept in the light, or reevaluating its place in Jewish history. Long neglected writings have been brought to light, and malign philosophies have been rehabilitated. The Messianic movement of Shabbatai Zevi is now, or Zevi is now, recognized for its enormous impact on Judaism. It is considered, in Scholem's own words, one of the most important phenomena of Jewish history and of the history of religions. Shabbatai Zevi was born in Smyrna on the Aegean coast of Turkey in 1626. The first half of his life was spent in solitude. And apparently because of an unpleasant experience with masturbation at the age of 15, he avoided women. He was later divorced by his first two wives because he refused to consummate those marriages. He was a brilliant student, ordained a rabbi at the age of 18. Shortly afterward, why are you holding that up when I'm getting on interesting stuff? How much time have I got? 4 minutes. He was a brilliant student, ordained a rabbi at the age of 18. Shortly afterward, he began to study Kabbalah, as did many young rabbis of the day, but Shabbatai stood out from other young Kabbalists by virtue of his periods of illumination, as his followers later called him. At odd intervals, he would be filled with an ecstatic, inexplicable joy when he would perform strange acts which often violated Jewish law. Professor Scholem has re-examined Shabbatai's behavior in the light of modern psychology. And I'll skip over his complicated analysis. In his early years, Shabbatai only hinted he might be the Messiah. He was dismissed as a crackpot, and his eccentricities rewarded with excommunication by several Jewish communities. It was not until shortly before his 39th birthday when he joined forces with an ascetic Palestinian rabbi named Nathan of Gaza that Shabbatai was taken seriously. Nathan became his leading prophet, reinterpreting popular Kabbalistic doctrines to fit Shabbatai's symptoms. He declared that Shabbatai's soul was waging a battle for freedom from the forces of evil. In his states of illumination, Shabbatai was prevailing. In his days of darkness, he was not. Nathan compared the Messiah Zevi to Job, who also fell under influence of Satan before returning to divine favor, but unlike Job's, Shabbatai's battle would decide the future of all mankind. A new age was dawning. Nathan's teachings touched a chord of longing among Jews everywhere. Rich and poor flocked to Shabbatai's banner for year-long revel in the years 1665 to 1666. Pious Jews danced in the streets of Amsterdam. Jewish gamblers in London and Hamburg offered 10-to-1 odds that Shabbatai would rule the world within 2 years. Polish villagers packed their belongings for a trip to Jerusalem, expecting to ride there on the backs of clouds. Shabbatai's believers clashed with infidels in the streets of Constantinople, easily carrying the day. Iranian Jews abandoned their homes to live in the fields, dressed in sackcloth and ashes. Even in far-off Yemen, Jews ceased all business, gave the money to charity, put on the best clothes for the trip to Jerusalem. In Salonika, perhaps the world's largest Jewish community, 700 to 800 girls were married off early in order to speed the redemption. Salonika's richest merchants gave away their belongings, touching off an economic crisis from which the city never fully recovered. Shabbatai himself spent much of that time in prison. He was arrested on his way to Constantinople to assume the Sultan's throne. Now, how do we get from here to those orgies? You better be watching when we come back live. The Jews have got themselves an interesting group right here. You better listen to me.